Welcome to Anaesthesia on Air, the podcast from the Royal College of Anaesthetists. I'm Tony Brunning, I'm a consultant anaesthetist in Worcestershire and vice president of the college. And today I'm joined by the team of the Generic Professional Capabilities Hub in Southeast London. And we're going to talk about their workshop that they've just delivered at Anaesthesia about the generic professional capabilities. So I'm going to start letting everyone introduce themselves.
Hello, I'm Hannah Heedon and I'm an ST4 anaesthetist working in Southeast London.
I'm Chris James. I'm a ST7 anaesthetist in Southeast London.
And I'm Joe Hogan. I'm an ACCS CT4 trainee working in Southeast London as well.
Hi there. My name's Shoman Sen, and I'm an anaesthetic consultant at the Royal Surrey in Guildford.
Hello, I'm Joe Lipton. I'm a consultant anaesthetist from London.
Great, thank you very much. So I'm going to start with you, Joe, and I'm going to ask you, tell us about the GPC Hub, where you got the idea from and where it's at now.
Thanks, Tony. So, yeah, the GPC Hub was something that I and others here came up with after the implementation of the 2021 curriculum, which places a much greater emphasis on development in non-clinical areas like education, research, quality improvement, and patient safety. These were always areas that were being learned in training, but they were quite informal. They were sort of in the annex of the old curriculum, and there were opportunities being missed, I think, to try to maximise learning and development in those areas. And it was also the case that when you entered a new department, it wasn't always easy to suss out what opportunities were available and who the key players were. So it was a combination of the new curriculum and conversations I was having with Chris, who had just come back into training from a leadership fellowship. And he'd had this fantastic experience out of program, and then he felt kind of busted down to private when he came back into training and being shown how to stick down a cannula again. And this kind of juxtaposition of experiences felt a bit irrational to him and to me. So we thought, how can we use the new curriculum to get people more involved in substantial projects and meaningful opportunities, and help them to develop along the way?
Amazing. Thank you so much. And I understand that the current GPC is hosted on the future NHS collaboration platform. So I wonder, Joe, if you could tell us a bit about how that's developed and what that is for those that don't know.
So, Joe approached me to get involved with the digital side of the GPC Hub. And as the GPC Hub grew within hospital sites and also at other hospital sites within the region, we needed to find a solution to let us communicate and collaborate across these different places. And initially, we looked at Microsoft Teams, which is something that's available to all of us. But we found that it didn't work very well in terms of connecting between sites, but also it didn't give us all of the opportunities that we wanted to have and utilize. And so we were signposted to a website which is called Future NHS, which is funded by the NHS and available to all of us working in health and social care. And quite quickly, it became obvious that it was going to be a place for us to house the GPC Hub and also have utilised some of the amazing resources that it has to improve our work. And so it's something that's available to everybody, and I think that it's a great thing to use.
And how many? How easy is it to learn, or how sort of digitally literate do you need to be able to use that platform and to sort of host your things on it?
So that's one of the best things about it, actually, is that it's managed and maintained by people who understand digital technology. So you don't, as a user or a manager of the site, have to do any of that work. And they're very responsive, and they help out with any queries or maybe updates that you'd like to see. But as a user, it's very much just drag and drop. So you can create little areas of the website in your own way. It's all very bespoke to your needs. Using the different features are very easy to understand and make great use of them. And the features are very similar to things that we'd be familiar with from using different websites. So, yeah.
I was impressed in your workshop about the different things that were being hosted on this. It's sort of like a website that you own, but through this platform. So you're using calendar features and you're storing content on there, using it as a kind of information sharing collaboration tool. Is that open to everybody, or do you have to pay extra for those bits?
No, that's the best thing about it. It's all free for people who work within the NHS, and you can access it through your nhs.net email address, just logging in with one login, and then all of the features are available to everybody. So we utilize principally the database feature, which provides a fantastic database that you can make bespoke to your needs. with different categories and also different specific features. So for example, if you wanted to have date, specific inputs or file uploads or specific email addresses, you can have all of those things set up. It also has the calendar feature that I mentioned, which we utilize a lot. One of the things that we really loved using, though, is the case studies feature. It's built into the website, and it provides a way for when projects are finished to be written up, and then you're able to see them in a library, but also create different categories of things you want people to get out of each case study that's written up.
Great, thank you. And we're recording this at Anesthesia in Belfast, and the theme of the conference is impact. So my question to you, Hannah, is how do you know that the GPC is having an impact and whether it's doing its purpose of making sure that those opportunities are open to all the residents?
So I've been conducting some research into looking out the residents involved in the GPC Hub are finding it, what their experience is, and if they've actually been able to develop these leadership and management skills as we'd like them to. Essentially, this has been really interesting. We've been able to conduct these interviews in collaboration with King's College London, which have enabled us to really understand the development that they've gone through. And actually what we've found is that residents really appreciate these roles. They really appreciate being able to take on leadership roles within a departmental structure. They like having the title of being, for example, a resident lead in sustainability or in quality improvement, as they feel that this actually gives them something official, it gives weight to them and really gives them a seat at the table when it comes to access to opportunities, seeing higher level decision making and getting involved with stakeholder engagement. We've also found that they're, even with the challenges that come with the roles, like time commitments and balancing work and life, they're finding these challenges as more learning opportunities to learn where to set boundaries, how to manage their time and how to delegate to other team members. So it does seem that they're really taking these roles and running with them and showing clear progression in these generic professional capabilities.
So it sounds like they're developing their GPCs, but also kind of other professional skills in terms of boundaries and that. So it's got an additional benefit.
Yeah, absolutely. I think what it does is it's recognised that this is work that residents are doing anyway, but it's given it a structure so that they can actually see their own development. They can identify learning needs for the future, but also really get involved with much more system-wide projects that maybe they hadn't been involved with beforehand.
I guess it's nice to feel that you're part of that bigger picture rather than doing a kind of low impact, easy project, to actually be able to see that you're part of a bigger project.
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, being a resident, you can sometimes feel a little bit transitionary in the department. We rotate around quite a lot and, you know, there's a lot of benefits to that. But actually being involved in these big projects and having the handover process and things like that, it means that you feel like the work you're doing is actually really impactful and quite meaningful within the place that you are working in, even if you're only there for 6 months, which is nice.
That's great to hear. So that's obviously developed in South East London. Shoman, I know that you have taken that and spread it into your region. So do you want to talk to us a bit about how you did that and sort of practically how that's working in your region now?
Absolutely. Thanks, Tony. Look, it looks really daunting. There's a lot of work that's gone into this, and Joe and his team have been amazing in setting it all up. And a few years ago, I looked at that and I thought, like, I really like the look of this, and I really want our residents at the Royal Surrey to get involved and have the same opportunities. And in the spirit of collaboration, it was actually really easy to set it up ourselves. We spoke to Joe and we spoke to his team, and they shared everything. And that's a real key point in this project. This is not just for siloed work. This is to break down those barriers and share the work and allow other centres to set it up. So we got all of the initial work and the Futures NHS website and all of the ideas. And our next stage was really to think, how do we adapt this to our trust? And we needed to fit within our pre-existing work streams and our pre-existing teaching structure. And that was our next job, is really we took all that information, we took all that work, and we fit it into the Royal Surrey. And we grew from there. And really, that spirit of collaboration has continued, because we regularly meet and share ideas and brainstorm new ideas. And as new hubs set up around the country, we bring them into the fold, and we've got then a bigger pool of people to share ideas with.
What would you say has been your biggest learning? So if I'm going to set up the next hub in my region, for example, what advice would you give me?
That's an interesting question. I think the first thing would be to not feel scared about asking for help, because all the information is there and we're very keen to share it. And then the other thing is about really thinking about getting departmental and stakeholder buy-in within that department. The key people there, all the great work is already being done, and the key people in that department, the people who are involved in education, are really keen to bring things forward. And so getting them on board early on in the project, and getting the residents on board, more importantly, because this is for them and this has to align to their GPC learning needs.
Great, thank you so much. My question to you, Chris, is how are you getting people involved? How are you incentivizing them? How are you kind of getting people to want to be involved in the GPC hub?
It's a difficult question, and as Hannah mentioned with the research, I think we found that people enjoy the meaningful side of the work. They like being involved in the bigger projects, but there is always that kind of thing in the background of, we're all very busy, why am I doing this extra work? And of course, no one's getting paid any extra for it, as ever in the NHS. I think for me, the incentive piece was kind of the last bit that we kind of felt we needed to bring it all together. As Joe referenced, I came back into training at ST4 after doing, or ST3 even, after doing a fellowship with Faculty of Medical Leadership and Management, always a difficult one to say, FMLM, where I worked at NHS England, and I did, it was during Brexit, during COVID, and we did all these just sort of never-ending projects around PPE, around ventilators, around all this kind of weird and wonderful stuff, but none of it really had an end point. And I left that year, handed all this stuff over, had this amazing experience, got the scars to show for it, and they didn't even give me a certificate at the end. And so you can put it on your CV and you can talk about it, and it's great for interviews and all that kind of stuff, but you don't really have something to go, and that's what I learned kind of thing. And it was frustrating in a way. I understand they just sort of explained to us why that was. But for this, we felt we wanted to make it clear to people that if you do 6 months' work or you do 12 months' work, then we will rightly give you a regional award. That means it just makes it that little bit easier for you to say, not only have I done this great bit of work, but I couldn't necessarily publish it or present it because it didn't really fit that mold. It was very operational, or it was working with finance people, managers, whoever it may be. But we, with the backing of the network, have been able to say, and you've got an award for it, which will be recognised, and you can use it for scoring points for your applications, or you can use it to talk about clearly in your consultant interviews. And the feedback that we've had from some of the residents as well has been that the award's very much a reflective process. So it's not about hitting targets, it's not about performance, it's about personal development. So the feedback we've had, if you sit down and write the award, if you've done a really interesting project where you've really delved in deeply, got into the standards, it writes itself. It doesn't take long because you've already thought about it. You've already had these experiences. So it was that final incentive piece. It was the reflective piece. And it was making sure that people had something concrete they could show as they move forward into their careers.
And how are the awards structured? Are there sort of levels, or is it an individual award, or for teams, or how does it work?
So at the moment, and again, it's a work in progress. It's currently a bronze, silver, gold, and it's mapped very clearly to the FMLM standards. So we've sort of almost been forced into that in a sense of the way the standards are structured, because they're structured as a self and team band, working at an organisational level band, and then finally working at a system level. So we mapped that across to bronze, silver, gold. And the difficulty you have with that is that you sort of nail yourself down to making system level work gold, organisational work silver. So almost as if it's more important or more impressive or those sorts of things. That was never the intention. That's currently where we are. And the work that we've had through from people, say, at an organisational level, which has been absolutely exemplary, we're suddenly going, well, that's a silver level award for organisation, but does that really fit, because it's really good? And we're sort of not quite there. But that's part of what this has all been with Joe and the team from the start, has been us learning, how do you reward people? How do you push them to develop? How do we solve that problem of incentivizing, rewarding, but making it robust and linked to standards, and making it all robust enough that people like the Royal College would look at it and say, we like that. It's good. It's a good standard. So we've got an issue to solve, but that's not the first issue that we've had to solve. And it won't be the last. So it's a nice problem to have. We're working it out. And I think the standard is still there. We're still happy that people are getting regional awards. We've just got some work to do around how those standards map directly across to the levels that we've initially created.
Great, thank you. And Shoman, have you taken the awards over to Surrey as well, or is that a work in progress? Or?
That's absolutely a work in progress. And in the spirit of collaboration, all of these great ideas, I just want them. And I think this is what's great about the project is we share everything and we've got a blueprint of how to set it up. So in KSS, we're currently trying to set up our award scheme and develop our own network as well. And then when hopefully new places set up in the country, we can then share all of that and all of the work we've done to assist them in setting up their own award schemes.
Great, thank you. A question for you, Joe. This sounds like an amazing opportunity for the residents working in South East London and now in Surrey. Do you allow or have access to these opportunities for your locally employed doctors and your SAS doctors as well, or is it exclusively for residents?
It's intended to be for anybody that has the same set of learning objectives, particularly the doctors that are working on the portfolio pathway are doing fantastic work in our regions. And our SAS doctors are also an integral part. And sometimes they're playing a leadership role too, actually, because some of our departments have SAS doctors in leadership roles within their departmental structure. So it's recognising the really valuable contributions that they're making as well.
So it sounds like this is having an impact for everyone and all anaesthetists in your sort of regions. So Joe, can you tell me a bit about the structure of the GPC? How is it sort of formulated and how does it work?
Well, each department in our system in the South East London School works within a three-tiered educational framework. So the bottom tier, which is for everyone, is educational content delivery. And we have a symposium program that covers off lots of the core topics in the GPC's domains. We've got a system for project engagement from advertising, cataloguing and writing up project phases. And then we've got new leadership roles for resident doctors. So those with a little bit more capacity can be their departmental lead for quality improvement, for example, or for research. And then we've partnered with other organisations. So we're really embedded within our departments, but we've also formed a partnership with the South East London Acute Provider Collaborative and the Anaesthesia Network within it. So this is essentially opening up spaces where resident doctors don't usually live. The way I usually like to talk about it is that resident doctors are quite familiar with the educational governance structure. So the GMC setting standards, the college writing a curriculum, heads of school, TPDs, college tutors and trainee reps at the bottom, resident doctor reps. And that's a governance structure that they're familiar with and where they have some influence. But there's that whole other world, that other ecosystem, which is the operational delivery of the service, the design, improvement, modification of the service with the whole multi-professional network that is involved there. And residents quite often just don't know how to access it. They're transient staff members, so they don't always have consistent engagement. And so what we're really trying to do is build a structure that enables them to access that other operational delivery arm of the NHS, which is where so much learning can take place. And the GPC Hub is really an interface between those two structures.
That's great, thank you. Hannah, how does it feel for you as a resident in this programme and in this system?
So I've been involved with it since the start, but what I've been focusing on more recently is this research looking at residents who've held leadership roles and how having these roles has impacted their career, their experience, the development of these leadership and management skills. Along with, I will give a little shout out to Dr. Anna Jones at King's College London, who's a really excellent educationalist colleague. And I think the key findings are that residents do want to be involved with this meaningful work. They do want to get a taste of this operational side of things. They want to, yes, we've got to do this work as part of our, you know, ARCP requirements, but that if we're going to be doing it, it's just really nice to get involved with something that's actually got real impact and you can see change in, and then you can hand over to someone else and you know that it's not going to disappear as you go off to the next hospital.
Great, thanks. And Chris, does it feel like it's kind of more work or does it feel like it makes the work easier? How's your reflection on it?
I think there's two aspects to that we tried from the start. I think as an individual, again, we're trying to make it as easy as possible. So you turn up from day one and you've got access to this kind of rich system that Joe H has talked about on futures, and you've got access to all the opportunities. And then The other side of it is obviously the benefit for the organisation themselves, the departments, and we obviously get a lot of questions around funding, SBA time, all that kind of completely understandable stuff. And I think the reassurance with this is that we're not suggesting we create something new, reinvent the wheel, introduce more hurdles or anything like that. This is very much a making it easy as possible to engage with the infrastructures, the operational infrastructures, educational infrastructures that are already in place. So the symposia, for instance, were built on educational afternoons that were already there that perhaps weren't as well attended or filled as they should have been. The projects that were there that are being led by consultants were already being done by the consultants, some of them getting very stressed and worked up about their workload, and we said, well, train up some of our residents and then leave a handover legacy and then they'll come in the next 6 months, 12 months. So I think there's a benefit to everybody in this, and it's certainly not about brand new things, introducing more hurdles. It's about working with what's there, what's already there, and making it as kind of beneficial for everybody that's involved, and hopefully in future up to and including kind of genuine operational impact, which is already happening in pockets. And imagine if you could do that across a whole network, which is where, you know, fingers crossed we end up in the future.
Yeah, and I guess the GMC have been very clear that these GPCs are embedded in all postgraduate curricula. And so actually this is enabling a very streamlined delivery and a sort of a very obvious way in which that's delivered. But it's not adding anything extra to the curricula because it's in there for everyone. Just to finish, if you could suggest one change or one improvement to the sort of delivery of generic professional capability training in the UK, what would it be?
Well, obviously, I'm going to say you should try to emulate our structure. But what I really think to drill into that, there is so much good work going on in every department in the UK. But what could we do more of to signpost those opportunities and create a framework that people can use to access? And I think we've demonstrated a model that can be exported. If I could have my real wish list, what it would be to look at the GPAS guidance for the good department and to put having a structure like ours as part of the ways that you evidence that you're a good department. Because it ticks a lot of boxes, actually. It supports educational delivery, but it also aligns a sector of the workforce that can otherwise feel quite disenfranchised and struggle to make an impact on their rotation. It taps into those people and aligns them with your local or system level strategy. So it solves both problems.
Thank you. And Joe, can I ask you, if a resident from another region said they're setting up a, you know, GPC hub in my region, you know, is it friend or foe? What do you think? What would be your answer?
As a resident who's been involved with it from the start, I found the process of the GPC hub such a useful way and structure to get involved in the generic professional capabilities. And I think one thing that I've definitely taken from it is it's the ability to engage with projects that have that slightly bigger reach. They have that slightly bigger, from the offset, about engaging with other members of the hospital team, understanding what it takes to build a bigger project. And I think that, for me, it's been a really invaluable resource.
Great, thank you. And Shoman, just finally, if people want to set up their own GPC hub in their region, how would you advise, or what would you say would be their first step?
So there's no need to reinvent the wheel, really. And it's to look for support. Look to other places that have set up hubs. Look to Joe, look to myself. Use our future NHS website. Find out what we've done. We will share everything that we have, and we'll create that support network to help you set up a hub.
Thank you so much, and thank you for listening. Thanks to our guests, so Joe H.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Chris.
Thank you.
Hannah.
No worries.
Shoman.
Thank you very much.
And Joelle.
Thanks, Tony.
We'll have more information and useful links in the episode description. And so for more podcasts like this, please make sure you subscribe to Anaesthesia On Air and review us while you're there, please.
Hi, I'm Dr. Catherine Bernard, one of the anaesthetist and training representatives on the RCOA Council and the clinical content lead for Anaesthesia 2026, which is going to be beside the seaside at the Brighton Centre from the 12th to the 14th of May. If you enjoyed this special conference podcast episode and want to join us online or in person for some inspiring speakers, hands-on workshops and world-class anaesthesia education, book your place at Anaesthesia 26. If you book before the 30th of December, you can get a 20% discount. Enter the code EARLY20, that's EARLY20, 20, all capitals, no spaces, during the checkout. There'll be a booking link in the description. We can't wait to see you at Anesthesia 2026.